Mrajuchtuden.
Mrajuchtuden.
Welcome to the Anonymous Eskimo Project, a program where I have candid conversations with guests about difficult but important Indigenous topics such as mental health, sobriety, recovery, and missing and murdered Indigenous people. These difficult topics need to be brought to the light, not only to educate, but to uplift our Indigenous relatives. Oyana for joining me. I'm your host, Ralph Sara. On today's show, I have Melissa. Melissa is Inupiaq from Point Hope and Anchorage, Alaska. Melissa has 26 years in recovery, and on this show, she courageously shares her story for those who are still struggling. So guys, please help me welcome Melissa. Hi, Melissa. How are you?
Hi, it's an awesome day.
Yeah, no kidding. Thank you for agreeing to come on the show and share your story. Can you go ahead and introduce yourself so our listeners can get to know you, please?
Yes. So my name is Melissa. My Inupiaq name is Masakarak. My family is from Tikiak or Point Hope up in the Arctic Slope. And I'm an only child of my mother. And as of right now, I have 26 years of sobriety and recovery.
Wow, 26 years.
Yes.
Amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you. That is so cool.
Can you go ahead and let us know about what things looked like before you got sober and why you got sober? And then afterwards, how you're living now, how your life is now?
Yeah, so like I shared before, I'm an only child of my mother. And at a very young age, my mother was a single mom. And we spent a lot of time here in Anchorage when I was little. And my mom, you know, was into drinking. And a lot of the parties happened at our apartment. And so I grew up in and around alcohol and marijuana and other substances. And so that's just the way things were. You know, I didn't know any different. So I remember being a young girl and thinking how much I really didn't like alcohol, though. Like I as soon as I would see my mom have a can of beer or a bottle of alcohol or people coming over with it, I would immediately get sad because I knew everyone was going to change, you know. Mm-hmm. And as the party would go on, of course, everybody did, you know. When you start to drink alcohol, you turn into a different person. And so as a little girl, I remember thinking, you know, when I grow up and I'm a mom, I'm not going to drink alcohol. Anyway, as life went on, at age 12, I was hanging out with a couple of older girls than I. They were 14. And one of them actually had an older boyfriend that lived next door to her. And I really, really needed to be accepted by these two girls. I had a long history of being bullied, and then my best friend had just moved, and you know, I never really quite fit in. I was either too native or I was too poor, or when I went to the village, I was too white. And so I really needed to fit in with these two girls. And this one of the girls had gotten a small pint of peppermint schnapps from her boyfriend. And, they wanted, you know, of course, they wanted all three of us. They wanted us to drink it together. And I was so scared. I remember my heart pounding out of my chest because, you know, again, I really didn't like alcohol and because of, you know, what I'd seen. And so anyway, I started to drink this alcohol and I took these tiny little sips and it was like, toothpaste, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. peppermint schnapps. And I remember we were passing it around between us three, and surely along somewhere, I started to take bigger gulps. And surely along somewhere, I remember my shoulders dropping to the side of my body. And I started to experience like, this is it. I have no fear. mm-hmm. You know, like I felt like I'd arrived. This is what I always wanted to feel. And all the worries that I had at age 12, and I had a lot, fell down to the side. And I was no longer afraid of what I was going to say to these girls. I was no longer afraid of anything. And I started to have fun and I started to laugh. And I was like, okay, I get it now. You know, I knew that alcohol was the answer. I knew that this is how I was meant to feel in life. And so anyway, at age 12, of course, I couldn't start drinking, you know, right away. And it wasn't too easy for me to get. But by 14, I definitely was drinking every weekend. And I chased alcohol like no end. I mean, I couldn't get enough of it. And it was my absolute best friend. And I felt like every time I drank, you know, I became the young lady I was too scared to be. And so it brought me to a lot of places. And I experienced a lot of things, you know, as a young girl. We found we eventually moved to Fairbanks, Alaska when I was 9. And then, of course, you know, I drank at 12 and then started drinking every weekend at 14. And there's a military base there. And you know, those guys don't care how old you are, really. And us girls that hung out with them really didn't care either, as long as they provided us with alcohol. And so that's kind of how we got drunk every weekend. But like I mentioned before, my best friend had moved away and she came back to town. She came back from the village and she was wearing all black and she had like this black nail polish. And I was wearing like, you know, pink, and every other word was like, oh my God, like, yeah, like, wow. and she came back from the village and hers was like, you know, every other word was the F word. And you know, and it was Metallica and Megadeth and AC/DC. And here I was listening to like Debbie Gibson and, you know, just like really pop music. And she yanked me out of that crowd of people I had been hanging out with and kind of put me in there with the stoner crowd of Fairbanks. And I started listening to, you know, heavy metal and I started wearing black. And I was not a very good stoner though. Like I just couldn't get into the smoking because I was like one of those people that got too paranoid. But so it made me a really good dealer at one point, you know, cause then I just never, cause I didn't smoke it. But I loved alcohol. I loved alcohol, and any chance that I got, I drank it. And I did get, you know, my minor consuming, and I landed in jail, and then I landed into some type of youth program. And I remember going for a little while, and I enjoyed the counseling and the other teens that were there, and we were all kind of experiencing the same thing. But I remember when I got 30 days, and my girlfriend gave me a wine cooler, and she was like, yes, 30 days. And I was like, yeah, 30 days, you know, and then I just drank the wine cooler. I didn't care. By 16, though, I had my first baby. And when I was pregnant with her, it was very, very important to me. I knew the effects that happen, you know, during pregnancy. And so I did. I stayed sober through my pregnancy. And that was so, so hard and challenging, especially when the partner, the father of my baby partied all the time, because that's how we met. We, you know, we partied. And the day after she was born, I left her with my mom and I went out. I went out and I partied hard. And I felt like I had catching up to do, you know, and it just, alcohol really did take priority in my life. And I eventually went to jail a few times and had another baby. And the third time I went to jail, I landed in front of the same judge. And I hadn't done anything for the first or the second time I had gotten arrested. I hadn't done anything and I had a warrant out for my arrest. And, you know, the judge was like, okay, this is what's going to happen. You're going to either serve 28 days in a treatment program or you're going to go to jail, you know, and do time there. And at the time in Fairbanks, FCC went non-smoking and I was a smoker. I needed my cigarettes. And I was like, well, I'm going to choose the treatment center, you know? And so he was like, okay, we'll give you this amount of time to turn yourself into the treatment center and get your time done there. And at that point in my life, I had two kids. I collected welfare. I sold weed on the side. I had an under the table cocktail waitressing job that I worked and I partied Thursday through Sunday. And I had no intent ever, you know, like nobody ever told me I had a drinking problem. And I always made sure I hung out with somebody who drank worse than I did. So I could say, see, I'm not that bad, you know. Uh-huh. And my excuse that I wasn't like my mother was my apartment was my kid's safe place. There was no partying allowed. And I was never around my children while I was drinking. And so I could say, see, I'm not like my mom, you know. And the unfortunate part of that, though, was it meant that I was gone all the time. Like, I, you know, Thursday through Sunday, I was gone all the time drinking. And anyway, so I had to turn myself into this treatment center. And a day before I was going to turn myself in, I partied at the bar I worked at. And I was like, okay, see you in 28 days. You know, like I had no intent of getting sober. Mm-hmm. And and everybody was like, okay, see you in 28 days. And I get into this treatment center and I left my two kids with their dad, which I'd never really ever left my kids with their dad. It's weird. I was really nervous about it. Because he was so undependable. And anyway, I got in there and I was outside smoking a cigarette with one of the other ladies that was a resident there. And I was like, hey, so what are you in for? Like, I thought she was there, you know, court ordered like mm-hmm. I was. And she was like, what do you mean? I said, oh, I'm here because I got in trouble with the law, you know, and told her what I had done. And she goes, oh, no, I'm here because I want to get sober. And I thought, holy smokes, what? You know, that, and that I think to me to this day is like one of those first messages that kind of woke me up. Like people want to get sober, you know, and I, mm-hmm. it was really surprising to me because where I hung out with and who I hung out with, all of us were partiers. And so after a week of a blackout period in the treatment program, they let me upstairs and into the rest of the residence, and they were having a group, and I had to sit in with these groups because that's what you do when you go to treatment. And this guy, he starts talking about the disease of alcoholism, and he said it like this. He goes, this is how the disease of alcoholism, as I understand it, he says, every time I take a drink of alcohol into my body, I get this overwhelming craving to get more and more and more. And oh my gosh, it was like I sank into my chair, you know? It was like every time he said more, I was sinking into my seat. Like, how did this guy know to put those words to exactly what I felt every single time I drank? It's not like I was at the bar, you know, partying with my friends saying, hey, the craving kick in yet? Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't something that we talked about. And so when he said that was the disease of alcoholism, as he understood it, I was like, whoa, I have a disease of alcoholism. And in his next breath, he was like, and there is no cure. I was like, my mind was blown. You know, I had no idea all along that I don't know. I thought everybody drank like that. And that's exactly what my mind said. You know, no, everybody drinks like that. And anyway, that was kind of like the second point in my early awakenings of getting sober. You know, that was like a big, I want to say it's awakening. It was like a awakening of an understanding that I have a disease called alcoholism and that there is no cure. The next thing that happened after that is they brought us to these 12-step meetings. And at first, it was just about getting the caffeinated coffee and eating the candy, you know, because we mm-hmm. couldn't have caffeine or sugar at the treatment center. And I sat way in the back and with the rest of the people in denial aisle, I guess is what they called it.
Oh.
And yeah, so it was way back there. But there was this lady who was always at these meetings and she laughed. And she laughed loud. And at the end of her laugh, she would snort. It would just crack me up. Oh my gosh, every time. And she was there every single time we went. So on a Friday night when they have candle lit and nobody, you know, and it was dark, I moved up closer thinking like nobody's going to see me. Moved up closer because I wanted to hear what's so funny. You know, why is this lady laughing so much all the time? I want to laugh. You know, I enjoy laughing. And so I did. I moved up closer and I'm waiting. You know, I'm listening intently to everybody who's sharing, who's telling this lady the jokes, you know. And somebody shared in that meeting, I don't know who it is to this day, but they shared, you don't have to live that way anymore. Sorry, that part always gets me. That hit me to my core, you know, that hit me to my heart. And I got to have that spiritual awakening that I didn't want to live that way anymore. And that's what these people were telling me. How else do you live then, you know? I thought I was living exactly the way I was raised up. If you're at a good meeting, like I was that day, they'll tell you, you get a sponsor, you work the steps, and you go to meetings. And that's exactly what I heard. So I went back to that treatment center, and my 28 days was up on my 23rd birthday. And I talked to my counselor. I was like, please, at least let me stay for 2 more days, like until my birthday is over. Oh. You know, because for my birthday, we had keggers at the gravel pits. And, you know, I did a lot of crazy stuff. And she was like, no, sorry, we can't extend your stay. You need to go home. And so I did. I went home and I went and I picked up these 2 beautiful children I had. A 3-year-old boy and a 6-year-old girl. And I went straight to where they have those 12-step meetings with my 2 kids. And I just sat there and waited. You know, I was so scared. I was so scared. I wanted whatever this sobriety was so much more than I wanted to drink. Sorry, it still gets me really choked up. And that's what happened for me. I stayed at that place, and I asked that loud laughing lady to be my sponsor, and I started working the steps. It was just an amazing, to me, it's how my higher power worked in my life, you know, sent me along. I mean, from the time from smoking that cigarette outside with that lady who said she was there to getting, you know, to get sober, to hearing what the disease of alcoholism, to hearing someone in a meeting say, you don't have to live that way anymore. All of those things kind of needed to happen in order for me to have this spiritual awakening of, okay, well, what can I do, you know? And so I was a dropout. I was, in my mind, afraid of everything. I was never gonna amount to nothing. I was, like I said, I was bullied as a young girl. When I'd go to the village, I got picked on pretty bad. And then when I would come to the city, I got picked on pretty bad because I was just, you know, raised on welfare and didn't come from much. And So I had a lot of fear, so much fear. And when I got the sponsor and started working the steps, slowly but surely, and the people in those rooms, they'd say, "We believe in you until you can believe in yourself." God, I needed to hear things like that, you know? So slowly but surely, I overcame fears. I ended up getting a GED. I ended up getting a job in an office building, you know, like where they wear Norman clothes and stuff. I had to go like get a whole new wardrobe. That's like the juicy part of my story. I got the good paying job. I ended up getting a license because I never had one of those. And then later on, I went to college and I got 3 degrees, and I ended up becoming a foster mom for a while, and I ended up buying my own house by myself. I ended up being a single mom for a very long time, and even a foster mom as well, and went through college like that and stayed sober. And today, I think, you know, not only being the example to my now adult children, because like my oldest is 32, and to be the example to them on how to stay clean and sober, how to face fears, how to overcome hurts. You know, I had deep-rooted hurts that I overcame. And I didn't always just use a 12-step program. I used outside help as well. I went to counseling. I sought out self-help books. I worked with other women in other programs. I wanted to be free. I wanted to be free from the fear. I wanted to be free from the hurt. And so I wanted to learn how to like who I am, you know? Mm-hmm. A lot of people who are battling addiction and alcoholism, myself, you know, don't always like who, I didn't like who I was. So today I do. Today I love who I am and how far I've come. I most especially enjoy working with other women that are on this path in recovery, that are looking to be free from their fears. And I think it's inspiring to go to a 12-step group and see people get their lives together. I've been able to see so many come through and do that and turn their lives around into just, you know, a dream come true, like myself. I met the man of my dreams, you know, in sobriety. And yeah, I live an amazing life today. I continue to work with other women. I have adult children, I have young children, and I'm a grandma. Yeah, I don't know what else to share with you, Ralph.
No, that was so amazing. Yeah, what would you say to somebody that's listening out there now in like the villages that don't have AA, or you know, this remote rural area that this is what they have? You know, what would you say to them? How would you encourage somebody struggling right now?
Oh, I would say it is. Especially it is just for today, right? Like, we are only given right now, for, you know, even for our conversation right now, just breathing in this moment and staying in this moment. And then for the struggling, you know, if you don't have a strong support, start with gratitude every day. And when your mind starts to wander off into worry, stress, or, you know, ugliness, judgmentalness, or, you know, any of those jealousies, come back to gratitude every time. And just, you know, I'm grateful for my breath. I'm grateful for, I'm clean and sober. I'm grateful for the clothes on my back. You know, gratitude for some reason is a really good grounding tool. Walk and do it, sit and do it, lay down and do it. I mean, you know, anyone struggling can find gratitude. Anyone mine, I was thankful enough. I could pick up a phone and call somebody. And I wanted this so bad, you know, I wanted sobriety so bad that I called people. And so if you know somebody that is sober, call them. There is even helplines. I know that the villages don't always have a 12-step program, but because of COVID, oh my God, the Zoom world for 12-step groups is just booming. Any time of the day, you can actually log in right on from your phone even and just listen to a 12-step group. I mean, it's so easy. And then even YouTube, if you look up speakers or even coming on to your website and listening to someone share, I've listened to at least seven, you know, I love to sew. And so I've been listening to your podcast and the people you've interviewed. Amazing. And I love that it's so diverse and it's so, there isn't one way to do this. You don't have to go to a 12-step program or a treatment center for that matter, you know. What's going to matter is the willingness to stay sober and just do it just for today.
Yes. Oh, man. Yeah. Oh, you mentioned that you sew. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. So, of course, it's in my family, right? We all sew. My mom's a skin sewer. I taught myself in 2017 using YouTube how to use a sewing machine. And so I did. I started to sew atigluks, of course. And the motive was initially to sew a parka together. And I've done that. I've done that. And it's been, you know, it's been how many years now? And I enjoy sewing atigluks, aprons, bags. Yeah.
But that's an outlet too, like a hobby that you can do, right?
Yes.
And that's a big thing I found out is, you know, try to fill your time with things that you like to do, you know, like hobbies and stuff like that. Because I suffered from FOMO, you know, like I'm not gonna ever have fun because I associated drinking with fun, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I suffered from FOMO, you know, fear of losing out or missing out. I mean, fear of missing out because I associated drinking with having fun, you know, because I always drank when I was thinking about going out and having fun with my friends, you know.
Yeah.
So when I get that feeling or something, I'll turn it into like creativity or something like that, you know. Thank you for uplifting our Indigenous people.
Yes, I'm so glad you asked me to come. It's been fun.
Well, that's all for today's show. I hope you, the listeners, found some inspiration, strength, and hope. Listen next week when I have another strong, courageous person on who is walking with us on this healing journey. This program is available as a podcast. You can hear this and many more episodes wherever you listen to podcasts or at anonymouseskimo.com. Join in the Anonymous Eskimo Project on 90.5 FM KCIE, the voice of the Jicarilla Apache Nation serving Dulce, New Mexico. I'm your host, Ralph Sara. Biura!
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.